So we have a special show for you this week. We have done our first live show, and it went a little long, and so we're breaking it up actually into three episodes. This is part three of our live show. We did not do any editing or any audio polishing of the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like these, please consider becoming a patron. We're going to start doing these more often. The video and the interactive chat is exclusive to our patrons.
This is Iconic.
We also used a rule that I really like from that John Wick puts in Play Dirty. I started off and said, hey, you guys have plot immunity. No unnamed villain will ever kill you. But if I tell you plot immunity is revoked, stuff's about to get real.
And there were times,
there were times where I'd be like, you guys can walk away from this scene. If you stay, you can gain X, but plot immunity is revoked for this scene. And the whole table, the tension just sort of click, 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 click. Because they're like, okay, any one of us could die. Is this worth going into this knowing that that safety has been removed?
There's a lot of looking around the table because if I remember correctly, every time he's done that, someone has died.
I don't pull punches when plot immunity is revoked. Like,
I remember the burning inn. I think we lost two people in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
So for GMs, that's not a bad trick. Is if it's inconsequential, yeah. At a certain point, say plot immunity is revoked. Let them know this is a deadly scene. You know, kind of like the video game. You see the little red triangle over someone's head saying you shouldn't attack him. He's of a greater level than you, and you go anyway.
Well, I mean, that's also, I mean, it's in the 13th H rulebook. If you look at it, Jonathan runs the game with no non-named NPC will kill you. If you get taken out by goblins, the goblins capture you. Now, granted, they're going to take you to a named NPC. But so for me, the first one that stands out in my mind is, it wasn't a campaign in the sense of we had a definitive start and a definitive middle and definitive end. But all through high school and college, we played Rifts. Like, Rifts was our game. If you are not familiar with Rifts, it is not chocolate in your peanut butter. It is sardines and herring and lamb in your chocolate and peanut butter. This is a world where you have cyborgs and mecha and giant robots and huge levels of magic and technology. It is, if you want something to be in the book or in the world, it's there. And I lucked out is my gaming group for almost a decade was, we were all GMs. And so the way the game would happen is we would meet up on a Friday night and we would play all night Friday, crash at someone's house, start on Saturday, play all day Saturday, crash, get up on Sunday, go to church, and then play until about dinner time on Sunday, and then go home and do homework and go back to our lives. And the way it worked was, hey, I have this adventure. Bring these characters, or bring first level characters, or nobody really fits here. So bring an eighth level character or justify to me why someone should be in here. And what I took away from that, seriously, like a decade, we have like friends from that time. We can get together and spend hours reminiscing on this storyline or that storyline. Or when my character died, one of the other GMs was so gut wrenched that she ran an adventure where another group went to hell and rescued his soul and resurrected him. What kind of stood out to me is, and I think this may be atypical in today's gaming, but the idea of emergent story, the fact that no one GM had one story to tell. It wasn't that we sat down and told the story of the Sinister Six trademark, the Sinister 17, or, the Salacious Four, or the story of the lost X. It was, hey, these are just the things that are happening to these characters. And those who survived had stories to tell. And so each person's arc wasn't necessarily an arc. It was just a collection of memories that formed who they were. And that was kind of what I took away, is that emergent stories sometimes stick harder than, hey, we're going to sit down, we're going to play this adventure path. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Like, the Absolutist War essentially was an adventure path that came out of this initial sandbox play. You guys latched onto this storyline and kind of went from there. But I would say the RuneQuest game that I'm running is much more emergent stories. Like, oh, this thing happens to the clan. What do you do? Okay, now here are the fallout of that. JD says that Rifts was her second RPG ever. High five, JD.
See, I never got into Rifts. I played it once in Germany. A guy ran it, and he probably ran it horribly. Didn't know the rules, because the one session was like, yeah, I don't need to go back to that game. So, and that's, I would tell people, if you try a game and you don't like it, try it with a different GM or a different group, because sometimes either he was unfamiliar. I think he was familiar, but just the way he ran it was like, yeah, no, I don't need a game.
Rifts is essentially the bastard offspring of D&D and Call of Cthulhu. and I say that with immense love for it, but basically it's the D&D combat system with some changes, plus the Call of Cthulhu skill system with some changes.
Not one of your gateway games.
It was for me. I brought a lot of people into that group.
So on the topic of emergent games versus more of a structured game, how have you kind of brought that element into your story, your structured games?
I think for me, I try to start off most campaigns with emergent story in mind, recognizing that most people are more familiar with the idea of like a story arc now, because we have Malazan Book of the Fallen and the Wheel of Time and never mind, I'm not going to say that person's name, because there's a little bit of a gag reflex, but we have this idea of like epic story arcs that sort of unfold. And so I realize, like, I try to start it with kind of here is a bowl full of spaghetti. I throw it at the players and see what sticks. But eventually, like, I'm very, very aware of what the players are interested in, with the hopes that eventually they tease out two or three storylines that they want to run. Now, it does make me want to, if at some point we are no longer streaming on Iconic, and I have all of these extra days in the week to just run games, like, I would really want to sit down with like a core group of players and say, cool, we are the GMs, here is the world, maybe microscope it out and say, let's just make a brand new world for D20 gaming. Just send me your notes and do this sort of, hey, I have an adventure to run. Who's available? Who has characters at this level? It has now become the term for it is the West Marches campaign. And you can definitely go check out, if you Google West Marches, one word, West Marches D&D, you can find the guy who coined this term and how he ran it. And there's actually like a Kickstarter that just recently finished up that it attempts to codify how the West Marches game would be run. Any other questions about the Rifts game? I could seriously talk for like 4 hours straight about all the crazy stuff we did. But any questions, or should we move on to second round? And then Becca actually had a great question. So after Rifts, before we get into second round, we'll answer Becca's question first.
Ask it.
All right. Okay, just waiting to see if there's anything else for Rifts. I didn't want to jump the gun.
There shouldn't be anything else for us. No.
Well, I was listening to you, your story, Mark, about how this one character really impacted you, and especially to the point where you can't look at a cherry blossom without having emotions and feelings. And as much as like it sounds like I am mocking or joking, like that's a real thing. I know several of my players have told me I miss my character because they meant so much to me. And whether it was because they were going through something really hard and this was an outlet, or they were discovering an aspect of themselves through the character, like there is that emotional connection. And so my question is there a character that you have played, or even that someone else has played, but that you have played particularly that has connected with you? Maybe you did put more of yourself into that character than you intended to, or if there is a game that has stuck with you because of the connection or the emotions and what it has meant to you.
I'm going to go last because this was my second campaign that I was going to talk about for this specific reason. So
Go ahead. You go first.
Okay. Well, because as Mark was talking about like tearing up and crying, there is a campaign that I have sobbed at, and that is our RuneQuest game. With my character Vasana,
if I may interrupt real quick, so that's a Glorantha game. Like RuneQuest is the current like flagship game for Glorantha, and you know that we all love Glorantha on this show. So I'm running kind of Chaosium's flagship game as kind of my personal house game, and Vasana is one of the characters in there. Sorry, I just wanted to provide a little bit of a framework around this story.
No, I appreciate it. So yeah, RuneQuest Glorantha set in a mythical Bronze Age setting. And I don't think I put a lot of thought into why she does things when I first made her. I made a shaman who was young, and in the very first session, the question was, well, what are you doing in this town? And I went, I don't know, I'm looking for supplies for my mentor shaman, because I'm an assistant. And everybody kind of went, oh, she's looking for the shrooms. And I went, yeah, why not? And so I started off this character rather drug addicted. Everybody treated her very poorly, which was really interesting. Like the other players' characters were just flat out mean to her. And she kind of had to keep hanging out with them because she was told to. And a very traumatic event happens where a beloved NPC is captured by the Brew, which are the chaotic evil creatures that are terrifying. And it broke the group. Everyone's character took that trauma and changed. The snobby, self-righteous priest, Chelana Aroy, turned into a massive drunk. And on the flip side, the shroom-induced, typically just hazed out of her mind shaman, dropped that all and became clean cut and was like, fine, I'll carry the tribe on my own shoulders and I will be the leader that he saw in me. And like roles reversed and like the status quo was thrown into upheaval. And then when I went through my shaman ritual in order to become a full-fledged shaman, I essentially killed that NPC when I broke his fetch because he was also a shaman. And I think I cried like 3 times during that session.
Like you cried when you realized that he had given you the thing you needed to succeed at your quest because he believed in you so much. You cried when you realized he died because when you kill a fetch of a shaman, they die. And then you cried when you realized you basically saved him by killing him because he had been captured by the Brew. Like there was a lot of hugging going on.
There was a lot of just like full on just like sobbing, and everyone else sitting awkwardly to the side as Jam was like, there, Becca, it's okay. And I'm like, So I have cried. I mean, I've teared up since then in just different moments with Vasana and her journey. And I'm actually retiring her because she's kind of reached the pinnacle and what she wanted. She's marrying the head of another tribe, and she is their full-time shaman. And so she has the power, and she has the respect, and she has the love that she's always been looking for. And so I'm like, sweet. Check, she's done.
And a child.
So, but yeah. Like that's, she is one character that I did not expect to emotionally connect with. And I did.
I think really the character of Darius that I was referring to earlier, that was probably the one I connected to the most. Especially, I realized that as we were nearing the end of the campaign, I realized that I had latched onto him a little bit too tightly in the sense that I did not want him to die. And you know, I mean, it happened, and I think there's always, you always have to play your character with a level of detachment because, you know, death happens. But there was a point where I was like, I do not want this character to die, and that was starting to affect the choices that I was having my character make, just because I was so attached to him. And then at the end of his moment of being able to help be the bridge to connect the two worlds and sustain all of the planetary life and everything was huge.
Yeah.
But I also am remembering our TPK session last time and Ray's character and what she went through. And
can I build
absolutely.
So we're playing in a fifth edition game. First of all, John is watching, and John just said to Vasana's story that is many reasons to cry. And yes, I don't think there was a dry eye in the room that entire session. In our fifth edition game that we run, so if you hear us refer to TPK, like every about twice a year, I run an all weekend little mini convention. It stands for Total Party Con. And there are sort of two tracks that are going on. And one of them is a game that we all play in. It's a fifth edition game in Tanar in the next age from the age that Becca is running in. And the character in question, our friend Maddie, if you watch Torg, she plays V. She was suffering just this massive traumatic experience, like a dead drowge sorceress had started to possess her, and she was wrestling with it. And when the possession hit like a tipping point, the group enacted this ritual to go into her memories and attempt to save the core of who her personality was.
And what ended up happening was we had gone in there to try to force this separation, and she ended up turning around at a pivotal point and just pouring out love into this possession or into the person who is trying to take over her. And I tell you, I mean, there was five, six of us in the room, and we were all just sobbing over what was going on. And, you know, that was one of those moments where I realized this stuff is real. You know, we get to the table, we play games, we tell stories, we have fun, we roll dice, and these times do have an impact on us as people. And yeah, that's one of those moments that they'll always stick with me. Just the crying, you know, over this pouring out of love by fictional characters.
Yeah. The way I explain it is like a board game. You may remember that time that you like went through Kamchatka and you rolled triple sixes.
Yes.
But when you talk about a role-playing game with your friends, it is not, do you remember that time that we played Risk? It was, no shit, there we were, and Mark saved me from a dragon. Like, there is no, do you remember that time that we played D&D? Like, it is a memory that we share as if it had happened. I think at the end of one of the TPKs, we were up at the cabin, and we had wrapped up this massive two-year fifth edition campaign. and I gave everyone the opportunity. And this is like JM's one of my main GM pieces of advice. I did it for the Absolutist War. I do it as often as I can. When you get to the end of the campaign, after you wrap up your big bad evil guy fight, right? We all have them. It's all building towards that. Let the players narrate their epilogues. And so we're up on Pike's Peak in a cabin, and we had just had this massive combat, and ever like emotions like had run their course, or so we thought. I was like, hey, now that this story is over, what does your character do with the rest of their life? We run around the table, and as this person is like, I give up. Like, this took everything that I had. I wander into the Underdark and I'm never heard from again. Or I go back and resume my post with the Empress. Or I do this, or I do that. And like, again, everyone has tears in their eyes. And you're like, this was a real moment in the world. We were gathered around the table and we shared something in a way that sometimes as people, sometimes especially as guys, we don't share, if that makes sense. And it was very real. What about you, Mark?
I gamed for a while. I probably GM'd more than played as a player. I'm getting more of that right now, and I'm really enjoying it. And when I first started playing, I can't say there was no emotion. Character died. Oh, he died. But it was more of, man, I just got into fifth level. He had this neat sword. It wasn't, man, I miss Aegon because he was such a cool dude. It was more of like when you die in a video game. Oh, I got to start again because he died. It wasn't an emotional attachment. Yeah, the samurai, that scene with Rey, I was playing an Oxen who... his thing was to protect the tribe, and I couldn't help her.
And then she gave you that little piece that made you feel like she was, you were her father figure, like when she handed out the pieces to everybody.
Yeah, and I couldn't help her because she kept blipping to different areas of her mind dungeon. Yeah, it was very emotional, and maybe that's why Robar the Ugly got ugly, because I was too invested in... things went bad for him, and he's like, I'm not going back. And afterwards, like, whoa, I can't play that character anymore, Jam. Let me take another guy that, let me put this other character, and he'll become an NPC, and you'll let me know what happens.
Yeah. I think the first time, and this is my second campaign that I wanted to talk about, the first time I realized that the emotions could be real, like, not just like, the feeling of loss when a character dies, or the feeling of, oh man, Becca, your character that's gone on all of these quests with me, just... So I was running an Exalted game. And if you're not familiar with Exalted, it is a super crunchy Avatar The Last Airbender meets like anime level combat. And we had been playing for a while. And this is the game. What my takeaway was, and like you guys probably all are familiar with this now, is the idea of JM's consequence list. When I run a game, all I do once the initial fuse is lit is I just keep track of consequences. I just bring them back up. And that makes the game super enjoyable, at least for me, but generally for everyone at the table. And one of my players, my good friend Bob, which if... just as a side plug to Bob, Mr. Bob Crumb on Twitch. He streams every day. His art is fantastic. He's doing a comic book with me. Check him out. He bought a cult. Now, in Exalted, you can have a cult, which gives you essence. And every time I was like, hey, Bob, what are you doing with your cult? He's like, nah, they're just off doing their own thing. I just want the mechanical benefits. And I was like, all right, that's interesting. So the game sort of revolved around, they were all brought together by this NPC automaton that one of them had built in one of her previous lives. And so Pearl was sort of the pillar which drove the group, like brought the group together. And They had a big enemy, someone who was part of their group in a previous life and had gone to the dark side. And I kept every session. I was like, Bob, like, I started every adventure. Bob, do you have any like advice for your cult? Do you have anything you want them to be doing? I kept expecting him to be like, well, I use them to go after this bad guy. He had a cult of assassins. And he's like, I don't actually care what they do, JM. They just do their thing because they're a cult of assassins and they worship me as their god. I'm like, all right. So they just had their big high. They had defended the city from a siege. And I was like, all right, I think it's about time that this cult thing kind of come into the story. And Bob doesn't seem to necessarily want to use them as a force for good. They are a big name assassin cult. And so I came up with the idea the group had started to rely a little bit too much on the NPC, and I didn't want them to turn into a DMPC. So I was like, hey, you guys come around the corner. Like, they're walking through the town the night after their big victory, and they see this automaton Pearl get killed. And when they run up, the marking that was left on the kill was Bob's marking, like Bob's character's marking. And they realized that the big bad evil guy had hired Bob's cult because Bob's cult had not gotten any directives on who or who not to take jobs from. And they had killed this beloved NPC. And I still remember it. Like, Bob just went almost catatonic. Like, he would not accept any input from anyone at the table. And Bob's wife, Amy, was yelling at him. And your daughter, Mark, was crying. And Christopher was like, I hunt these guys down and kill them to a man. And I remember walking away from that table going, holy cow, this, I have to be very careful and very much a steward of my players, because this was a real emotional response. Also, the consequence list is working, but this was like a real kind of emotional investment, and it defined the rest of the campaign. Like, Bob's character at the end threw himself and this villain that was the big bad evil guy into the well of oblivion that exists at the bottom of the underworld, erasing both of them from existence because his character couldn't live with the guilt that the person that he basically loved most was dead because of his inactions. And it was a beautiful ending.
And when James says his wife yelled at him, we can't repeat what she said in the room.
They're fine. They're still happily married. I should point this out.
Yeah, it was very emotional. Yeah,
it was
good game.
You just got like the back half of that, because Stefan Chris came home and kind of told you what was going on in the game.
Yeah, I got like, what happened? You went to go play a game. Yeah.
So John had another question for us before we kind of see if there's any other campaigns we want to talk about, or maybe just see where it is going. Who is your most hated character that you have played in a game?
As a character we played?
Yeah, I think so. Like, as a character that you have played, or I'm going to expand a little bit, maybe as an NPC. The guy that the group loved to hate, maybe the guy that you hated. Like, there have been times where I have brought up, hey, the opinions expressed by this NPC do not reflect the GM. But you have gone there, and I will meet you there, sort of a thing.
I think the most hated NPC would be Histall, for me at least. Part of that is because...
Histall was was this priest of a goddess of vengeance. Like, in the Tanar, if you've followed our Tanar sessions in Becca's game, or kind of the discussions we have around it, is... The perversions, like these gods who ate their father and now rule over essentially the Gotham city of Tanar. And Histall is the high priest of vengeance. And every time the players have encountered him, they have gone in possibly not expecting to kill him or expecting to kill him. And he always seems to come out ahead.
Well, and some of that was back to my original foray into role-playing games, we went into combat with this guy. And it seemed to me, and again, not realizing what we were actually doing, it just seemed like creative storytelling. Hey, let's throw a twist into this. I put the brakes in the middle of combat and tried to negotiate with him and tried to convince him to join our side, or at least, hey, think bigger than what you're thinking right now. And that seemed to catapult his ascension, so to speak.
He thought about then, larger than that.
Yeah. Right. Consequences. But he's since, I mean, he's been a recurring character as we have played in Tanar. And every time since then, it's been one of those things where I hear his name and there's just this visceral reaction of, okay, maybe this time we'll take him down. And then the negotiations somehow start and we realize, no, let's leverage him instead and allow him to leverage us instead. And it just has never been able to escalate into full-fledged combat again to where we can finally take him out. But that would be the NPC that has come up numerous times that I love to hate.
Well, and Mark, you talked about Robard as the character that you played, that you had a strong emotional response of going, I'm done. Like,
but up to that point, I enjoyed playing him. He was a rogue, an orphan on the street, brought in by the Thieves Guild, was rough around the edges, had a soft spot, if you've ever played the Dark Eye, when we got over to Festum, where he donated a lot of money to the Goblin Orphanage to take care of goblin orphans. And then he ran into Blessed One of Rondra, who made him go to the dark side. Honestly, I really hate him. I still miss that character. If I could, reload that game before that and just take a different choice. But it's like life, just consequences. Just like consequences. The dancers would be another NPC. I don't know if I really hated any of my characters. There's characters I played like, and let them die or try a different character next time, but I've never really hated any character. Dancers are another NPC, kind of like Kistel. Every time you meet them, you never come out on top, even if you can defeat them. Usually it's a bloody mess, but
they cut deeply. I remember we walked in and James had just said the room felt cold. And all of a sudden I was like, crap, we're going to fight the dancers. And just in the ratcheting of the tension, just from the description that the room felt cold. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Becca, do you have anyone that's either stands out as a hated person or maybe a hated, like, I think the original question was character that you have hated playing, but I feel like expanding it out to hated NPCs and why?
I can't think of a character I hated playing. Like, I was trying to go through with them all. I know there's been some that I've been told they cannot come back to the table because you will kill them. The good lady Millie being one.
Yeah, I hate the good lady Millie, one of Becca's characters. imagine an overly extroverted Puritan housewife in the middle of a grimdark Zweihander game. And I was just like, the whole time, to credit Becca, she played her to the T, but every time she played her, it was like fingernails on a chalkboard.
I only played her in one session, I think. It feels like more, because anytime she did anything, she had to give a quote or a reason, like preaching as she does things. And I picked some random accent to go with her and everybody else laughed and JM was like, good lady Millie is dying.
That's and right.
He's actually put her in something that he's written and she is dead.
Yeah.
Good lady Millie.
I hated her so much that I put her into a story as the plot hook of a dead.
Sorry, Becca. I consider her a success then, I guess. Yeah, I don't know if I've ever hated my characters. I knew the good lady Millie was not enjoyed. I did not particularly enjoy playing Praedon in the first Dark Eye game, mainly because I didn't understand what he could do.
Mm-hmm. But he got eaten by a dragon, right?
Yes, he got eaten by a dragon.
So there you go. It all worked out.
And Yonka is just delightful, so it's okay.
I would say that number one, the character that I hate most is not from a role playing game. If you have ever read the Malzahn series, Malak Rel, the priest of Jistal, if I could bring one character from fictional to life for the express purpose to murder them with my own hands, it would be that guy.
I was going to say then like an NPC though that you have made was Darien the Great. And it wasn't so much that I Becca hated him, but I kind of was like, oh yeah, I think my character doesn't like him. And then the way that he kept just getting brought up and...
So it was a 13th Age game at the store and I needed the name of an NPC and I was like, Becca, who's a thief that you hate? And she was like, Darien the Great. I'm like, cool. And then I just kept throwing it at the party. In fact, it got to the point where they were looking for Darien's treasure and they found a solid gold grate in an alley. And the group picked up on the fact that he even marked it as Darien's grate, as in Darien's great.
Right. But I enjoyed the fact that my character intensely disliked this thief. And yet I think by the end, it turned out that this thief was her mentor,
mm-hmm.
and had been kind of feeding like my character the seeds in order to become greater than him.
I think in recent memory, the one that like stands out the most of NPCs that a group has hated has been Kennen.
I like Kennen.
All right. So
none of Kennen, my characters have interacted with him in a way to hate him, so I've enjoyed him. But Kennen is from our RuneQuest Glorantha game. And so anytime that we have interacted with Kennen, I haven't been playing Vasana, my base mm-hmm. character, I guess. It's always been someone else. So Vasana doesn't hate him. Beckett doesn't hate him. But oh my gosh, the other three players do.
Now, the reason they hate him is because they walked into Swenston. Haha, I remember the trick. And one of the two of the PCs are like, we're here to do research. We want to get information. And two of the PCs are like, nah, we just want to go find a fight. And they started asking around and they actually like, I think they fumbled their streetwise role to try and find a fight. So they met Kennen, the most honest merchant. Like everyone always said, like Kennen has never lied to them ever. He's never spoken a falsehood. And as Becca watched, he got these two characters to walk to a lunar imperial slave pen, remove their armor, remove their weapons, and enter a gladiator pit. And one of them died because of it.
And then the other one was enslaved.
So everyone at the table, every time he shows up, they're like, we are going to get this guy. But it's not that he lied to them. Like, two of the players at the table were like, he didn't say he was going to give you the money. He just said you were worth 300 lunars. No, he said, no, don't do this. And just like little breadcrumbs. And now the group hates him. It's wonderful.
It is. It's amazing. Yeah. Watching that unfold, I was in awe. I saw what was happening and I was like, I'm not there. I can't say a word. So I just sat there and I was like, I would repeat what Jay Hammond just said. Like, this is something for you to listen to. And they're like, yeah, we know. Like, stop bothering us. And I was like, all right, fine. Go for it.
There's nothing I can do about this. Mark, do you have anyone that stands out for you?
Just the NPCs would be the dancers. That's probably the different campaigns. We'll see what happens during TPK. There might be some NPCs. Well, I know there's one that Becca's character.
Oh, what is the name? The elf who turned Elfinian.
All right, so for a little bit of context, the dancers are basically these servitors of in my sort of multiverse, because they sort of appear in multiple genres and in multiple games. The dancers serve this embodiment of entropy known as Absolutus. And they come from a realm of absolute zero, and they their touch is razor sharp, and so they, like, people lose limbs when they fight them. But I bring them into games, and immediately, like, especially like legacy players who have played through a number of games with the dancers, I'm more judicious with them now, because every time I've brought them into the campaign, they've become the focus of a campaign. Like the groups are like, they latch on, they're like, F these guys, we have to stop them from doing what they're doing. John said that he loves, hates Kennen, and I love hate Kennen too. He's a delightful. And I think the last time the group interacted with him, not only did he attempt to reconcile, but he gave them all of the gear they needed and servants and a receipt. And when asked what the receipt was for, he's like, well, you know what? You guys have been trying to kill me because I got your friends killed and enslaved. So the going rate for a troll in the Lunar Gladiator pits and the going rate for a Praxian noble barbarian in the Gladiator pits is exactly equal to the amount of goods and servants that I have given you. So now we're equal, right? And the group was like, we were just bought off. Oh no, we just were bought off from our friends who were killed. Oh no, we're horrible people. It was
Becca's still okay with this because her player, yet again, has no like connection. Whenever Kennen shows up, my core like characters are not there. So I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, you're playing a fox person. What do I care about these people who died like 8 months ago in game time? And then Elthenian is a rival to Becca's warlock, who they are both in competition for their patron's attention, and Becca's character is winning. And so Elthenian has started to play dirty. I don't have to be the one who actually proves himself to the wild hunter. I just have to be the only one who can prove himself to the wild hunter. And so he keeps showing up, and the group is starting to be hounded by this NPC. I really enjoy you guys. You guys are great players, and I love running games for you.
He shall die. So
we are at an hour and 45, which is any other campaigns you want to touch on briefly? As things that you were going to take away, any questions, guys? Thank you. These were all great questions, both posted on Patreon and in the chat. Any final things you guys want to talk about?
I was going to talk about some of the Jackals games that I've played in. Because I wish to go back and finish the Darkness Over Gair campaign, which was a very much a political campaign and not so much a finding the monsters and killing them. But then also another emotional character was my Trouj Alkitar Rama, who lost an arm and an eye and so decided to retire with the horses and
no one stay realized here that for she the wasn't rest talking about life. Retiring.
Yeah, I had made the choice. I was like, because of her beliefs and who she is and what she believes her purpose is and the mantle placed upon her. And since she can no longer fight and destroy the monsters, she's done. And so I told everybody, like, she's going to stay at this tribe that they found. She's going to retire and take care of the horses. And everybody was like, okay, that's great. And I looked at JM and I was like, yeah, she's walking up into the mountains after the party leaves. And is it coming back?
Yeah.
And so, later somebody was like, oh, hey, how's Rama? And I was like, oh, she's dead.
Like, so Becca gave a great overview of Jackals on the last Monday night 13th Age game on Iconic Production. If you are unaware, you ever hear us talk about Jackals. Jackals is a game that I have coming out in February with Osprey. It's another Bronze Age fantasy game. I really enjoy it, obviously, because I've run a lot of it. Becca really enjoys it. So just, it wasn't meant to be a plug. That was just more of a, in case you don't know what Becca's talking about, you can go check out what she said on Monday night, or there's going to be more information from Osprey forthcoming.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to pick up Jackals again. We didn't complete the last bit. Hmm. It's a fun system. Keep your eye out for it. I'll plug it. Osprey. Thank you.
Any final thoughts on the campaign topics?
Yeah, no, I mean, sure, we could go on for a lot longer if we wanted to. Maybe another session we'll talk about some other aspects of campaigns or something.
Well, if you guys enjoyed the... Oh, sorry, Nick, did you... Okay, no, I saw you shaking your head. I just wanted to give you a chance to...
Just a plug that, I mean, I know everyone who's listening is probably either running games or playing games, but get out and do it. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
And like Becca, if you're with a group of people who all want to play and nobody's willing to do it, take the challenge and step into that GM role and go with it. It's not as hard as you think it is.
Yeah, it's
done. No one else knows the game. No one knows you're not playing it right.
Right.
It's true.
And seriously, it's not as daunting as, like, once you start, it's not as daunting as it may feel when you go to start. Maybe we'll do an episode on, like, first-time GMs, like, things to be aware of and, like, what to focus on, what to, like, let fall to the side, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But if you enjoyed this, if you enjoyed, like, tuning in and just watching us chat and interact, let us know. We would be willing to do another one of these. Like, we're trying something new. If you like it and are tuning in on the podcast, comment on the website. Let us know. Go to YouTube. Comment on the YouTube video and say, hey, we like this. We want to be involved. If you want to be involved and be in the live chat, please consider subscribing to us on Patreon. This is a benefit for one of our Patreon members. Thank you to Evan and Phantom of Truth and to John for commenting and providing questions for us. That was awesome. Becca, thanks for providing a pivot in the middle. I think that was a great evolution of the topic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Iconic. Until next time, we'll see you in 2 weeks and good gaming. And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.